The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
And away we go. It's another edition of the Arrowhead Pride Editor Show. My name is Pete Sweeney. I'm the editor-in-chief of arrowheadpride.com, joined once again by my esteemed executive editor, John Dixon. John, I know the mouth is feeling better. We're getting ready for what you were just telling me off air is a eclipse for before we get into the football. Let's culture. I'm going to include myself here, but our listeners and myself, what's going on here in a few weeks?
On April 8th,
a
total solar eclipse will travel up through Texas and across the Missouri Boot Heel into Illinois and Indiana up towards the Northeast. It'll be just like 2017, but not in Kansas City. It's going to be some distance away, and I'm traveling to meet it.
Right,
because I'm a big fan of this kind of stuff. So
yeah, if you go to John's X profile at Arrowhead Phones, I see here that you follow me, which is good, John. Executive editor for Arrowhead Pride. Right after that, it says Groovy Science Grandpa, and that's before mentioning all the Super Bowls and covering Schottenheimer to Haley and Andy Reid. So we know how much science comes into your personal life, your hobbies there. So that should be pretty fun. We'll make sure things are taken care of at Arrowhead Pride while you're sightseeing and if you're off the grid, so to speak. But look, we're in the thick of the off season, so it's time to rest, relax, check out things like that. We are slow. This is the slow burn of Kansas City Chiefs news. So in this podcast, we're going to round up some of the items that came within the past week. We actually have Steve Serta back behind the digital glass. So the boys are all back together. He's going to join us for segment two to go over the new rules that have passed. And they're actually, I think, you know, we don't always see it, John. And to tease this segment, like this was some legitimate changes in the NFL that actually took place right now. The owners' meetings are going on down in Orlando. And so this is where things happen. I was happy to see, John, that there were less rules curbed for the next owners meetings this time around. There was a little bit more clarity than we sometimes get.
Right. Yeah. I actually expected there to be several that would be tabled until the next meeting, but they took action on pretty much everything, I think.
Yeah. And so we have clarity for the NFL season. The big one is kickoffs, which we will get into again, part of the news. And then we'll go over all of the new rules in the second segment with Steve. And you got to think that our guy, Steve, is not going to like certain rules that are passed. And I love to hear those takes from our lovable Arrowhead Pride podcast producer. But first, reviews, right? If you like the Arrowhead Pride podcast network, you can leave us a rating and a review on Apple iTunes. I checked this. And I'm going to do some humble bragging, or I guess not so humble bragging. We are among the top rated podcasts on Apple iTunes. I would like to see 4.7 get to 4.8. Right now, we're like in this like three-way tie for 4.7. I would like to see us get to 4.8. So along with comments, which we'll read on the show, if you don't want to leave a comment, you don't have to. But if you have an Apple iPhone, I would love if you went to Apple iTunes and just gave us 5 stars. Again, think about an Uber rating. We're at 4.7 right now. We've been stuck on that for a while. Would love to see that grow to 4.8. So it takes 2 seconds. If you like our podcast, you go to Apple iTunes, you click 5 stars. And hopefully in the coming weeks, we see that grow. Okay, enough of that stuff. Let's get into the news of the past week. Jerry Sneed, so far, still unofficially, is no longer a Kansas City Chief. We saw Kansas City late over the weekend swap picks in the seventh round with the Tennessee Titans. John, they also got a third rounder in next year's NFL draft, the 2025 NFL draft. That'll be a pick for the Titans. Could be a good pick. You know, I think sometimes when we see teams win the contest that is the free agency frenzy, a lot of times the year is more disappointing than it pans out. You know, then we look on paper. We've seen that time and time again in the NFL where you're like, wow, this team really improved in free agency. No, they didn't. They won six games, and all of a sudden that pick is a lot better. So we'll see where that third pick lands. But I think the key here is that we see Legarius Sneed move on to a team that is signing him to a four-year extension. Sounds like they're still figuring out the details. John, you put together a really nice article over the weekend about some of the bones of this trade. Anything you want to react to? I know you weren't on an emergency podcast when we did it, so this is your first podcast to comment on the deal. What's your general reaction?
Well, I think people expected much more return on this trade than the Chiefs got. And so I can't blame people for feeling disappointed about it. But, you know, it's easy to dismiss a swap of seventh round picks, but Tennessee had three of them going into this deal, and they gave up the first one they had, which is the first pick in the seventh round. It is a full round earlier, 31 picks earlier than the pick the Chiefs gave them, which was 252. It's 252 to 221 in the overall order. So, and you know, the Chiefs have done really well in the seventh round in under Brett Veach, and getting a pick that's a round earlier than it was before is a significant thing. Now, the third rounder, you know, who knows? Tennessee has ranged from the seventh pick, which is what they have this year, to the 29th pick in the draft order since in the last 5 years. That's a big range.
Right.
I think it's reasonable to think it'll be somewhere in the middle. I think they'll do better next year than they did this year, and they'll have a somewhat later pick, but it's still going to be a better pick than the Chiefs could have gotten by getting a comp pick, which of course isn't guaranteed.
Yeah, we know that the Titans offense has loaded up this past offseason. Tony Pollard joins the running back room. Calvin Ridley is now in the wide receiver room along with DeAndre Hopkins. But I mean, you've heard me say in this podcast, if you've been listening for years, like if you don't have a quarterback, you don't have anything. And right now you're looking at Will Levis. And I think we've seen sparks or flashes that Will Levis can be that guy, but also at the same time, we don't know. And if he doesn't perform well and the Titans end up with a 5-12 season, I'm still getting used to the 17 game season. I was about to say 5-11, 5-12. Then all of a sudden, you know, you think about that third round pick kind of becomes a second because, you know, you go a little bit higher and you're still among what, you know, the top 60, 70, 80 players, just depending on how the comp picks go. And so I think it was the best the Chiefs could do now. I'm going to share some things that I know right now that we'll have more to come at Arrowhead Pride once everything becomes official. But I think some things that people should realize, and John, this is more for, I think, like the upset fans. I can say that I think Sneed's knee issues have mattered more to this than people are really giving it credit for. You got to be careful when you're an NFL GM trading for a player that has been on the injury report for 20 of the 22 reports. Now, played in all the games, so it is a treatment thing. But, you know, you look at his missed training camp. You know, there is treatment going on throughout the season. Who knows how much it took the training staff to manage it. Like a lot of things, the NFL requires teams to report, but on the injury report, you're just on the injury report or not. We don't know if you had a taped thumb,
right?
Or you know, you got to be massaged for an hour and a half before practice. Like, there's no barometer of that. So I think that's worth noting. As far as I could tell right now, this was the only offer on the table. I know that there were a number of teams interested. The Titans, obviously, Minnesota Vikings, Indianapolis Colts, New England Patriots, but no legitimate offers to my knowledge than this. And so And I think to get a third rounder, that we just assume, hey, Snead walks after the franchise tag, Chiefs are going to get a third round pick comp back. A lot of things go into that. Like if the Chiefs make a flash and a splash in free agency, if that's uneven, if Snead doesn't go for as much money next year, so that could be a different pick. That could be a fourth rounder. So who knows? That, you know,
yeah.
And you get it a year earlier too, right? Of course, you lose the franchise tag year of Snead, but you get that pick back next year. And then finally, what I would tell you is with the money, and John, with the Derek Nnadi information that we got today, we're estimating, what is the salary cap around now?
$25.7 million, yeah, available. Yeah.
I look at defensive end Mike Downey. He's just been sitting out there. And, you know, you think about a defensive end that is out there on the open market that was able to have 17 sacks over the past four seasons. Yeah, I'm not saying it's going to be a break the bank deal, but you got to think that there have been interest. I think there's a reason Mike Downey has just been sitting there waiting. And I tend to think that's the direction that the Chiefs go in with that additional money. And so I think when you have a trade, right, and it's a beloved player like Ladarius Snead became, certainly an elite lockdown corner in the NFL, instantly when you hear a swap of sevens and a third round, like, you know, we wish it was a lot more. But then, John, you were alluding to it. You think about the seventh rounders the Chiefs have taken in the past 2 years. Nick Jones, Jalen Watson, Nazi Johnson, Isaiah Pacheco. Hell, look at the opposing quarterback in the Super Bowl. I think the seventh round has gained some steam these past few years. I used to be this throwaway round where I think now you're picking first in that round. Who knows what Kansas City gets out of that being 31 slots higher. And so,
well, historically, seventh round pick, a pick in that range, which is actually the virtual eighth round. I mean, it's, you know, if you're dividing by 32 through the course of the rounds, it's actually the eighth round, which you put in the comp picks in the earlier rounds. But picks in that range typically succeed at a rate of 7 to 10%. And the Chiefs have had a success rate under Veach at least of 50%. I mean, that's, you know, that's the Chiefs have done a lot with these seventh round picks. And I think it's probably, if we looked at it, I would just guess that in recent seasons, there's been more success than we've seen over a longer term among the rest of the league. But that's in part because of outliers like Isaiah Pacheco and Brock Purdy. And, you know, it's hard to know until you actually look at the data, but I wouldn't be surprised to learn that it's been a little better lately. And that's, I think, as it should be, because I think late round picks are more valuable than people give them credit for.
Yeah. And again, it's more than Madden and the front office GM simulation that some people play online as well. Like, you got to have two to tango. We've talked about that dating to the NFL draft last year when there was interest in potentially Quentin Johnston or Zay Flowers coming to Kansas City. They couldn't get up because no one would pick up the phone. So, and even this offseason, again, with Pittsburgh, and maybe there was interest in Deontay Johnson as opposed to going in the direction of Hollywood Brown. So, again, I just think a lot goes into it. I understand the raw reaction. You're like, Snead is awesome. This should have been a first. We should be in the top 15. But it's just, you know, I think, again, you got to look at the whole situation. And what I would tell you is I think the Chiefs did the best they possibly could with all the information that they had and the situation that was at hand. All right, John, I mentioned wide receiver and how those damn Steelers wouldn't trade with the Chiefs. Deontay Johnson, when he ended up going to an NFC team, I believe. Travis Kelce on his podcast this week reacted to the Hollywood Brown signing and had somewhat of an argument with his brother about incentives. Jason Kelce now can say whatever he wants now that he's out of the NFL, but he says incentives shouldn't exist. You should just be able to make whatever you're going to make. And then Kelce was like, everyone has incentives. Everybody has their stuff in the line of work that they might have to meet. Hollywood got a certain guaranteed money. I think it was like 8.2, and he can get up to 11 million. And then Kelce said, Hollywood is going to get 11 mil because he's worth every penny and he's about to go crazy this year. And so that's a good reaction from Travis Kelce. I think earlier in his career, John, Kelce would have been maybe barking for the ball. Like, you know, you saw those games where he was like it, but now he's just to the point of like, I just want to win. I don't care if I have one catch for 7 yards, as long as we're winning the game. That's all he seems to care about at this stage.
That's definitely been a change in his attitude over the years. And, it, you know, that's the way Tony Gonzalez was. When he left the Chiefs, he was at the stage of his career was where he was actually angry that he wasn't getting the ball more often. So and so we saw that from Travis early in his career. But now that he's had some success and knows what that feels like, he's prepared to trade that success for individual individual achievement, which is, I think, just what fans want to see. So,
yeah. Yeah. And I think he fits well into what the Chiefs want to do. I think they're probably still going to be looking for a big target for Patrick Mahomes, and we'll see what happens in the NFL draft. But as far as that speed element down the field, that I think of the player that they look at it as more of a natural receiver than a Mecole Hardman, right? Like Hollywood at times has shown an MPH, miles per hour, on next gen stats that would rival Tyreek Hill or be in the ballpark of Tyreek Hill. So it's like, what can you do with that downfield? And so we will see. I know that there's still been some draft analysts that are mocking wide receiver to the Chiefs. I know a lot of fans feel that they shouldn't be done at wide receiver just because they got Hollywood Brown. And you know what I would tell you is I don't think they feel that they're done, but it does allow you to, where, you know, before Brown was a member of the Chiefs, you're thinking they have to take a wide receiver in the first round. Now they're, I think there's a lot of ways they can go. And I think there's an argument to be made. The biggest need right now is offensive tackle. You know, after getting Chris Jones and loading the defensive line back up, we just talked about Mike Dan. I think by the time you get to the draft, you're like, can they get a tackle here? And then maybe you address some of the depth at these other positions, including receiver later on in the draft. Of course, we have each season on the podcast network that goes into all of the NFL draft analysis and maybe what the Chiefs are thinking, what we want the Chiefs to be thinking, so on and so forth. John, I don't think this is any surprise. Andy Reid confirms it at the owners' meetings, but a couple teams, including, we knew about the 49ers, but it sounds like a couple teams are interested in the services of Steve Spagnuolo. I joked about this in the article. We always talk about the contract year being undefeated for players. What a year for Steve Spagnuolo. Quietly is like, let me just let my contract run out behind the scenes. I mean, he must have made a pretty penny. We never get that information on coaches, but to just retain him as defensive coordinator, I gotta imagine when you have a couple teams competing for you and you just put up one of the best defensive years in Kansas City Chiefs history, must have did well. We'll see if maybe his favorite bar in Philadelphia get some upgrades because of that. Big Charlie's. What'd you make of multiple teams being interested?
Oh, well, I'm not a bit surprised. I think it's unfortunate that he had such a bad situation when he was with the Rams as the head coach that he had that. Cause I think he really is an excellent coach.
Yeah.
Being a head coach is too big for him. That happens to, you know, there are coordinators who don't succeed as head coaches and go back to being coordinators and show that they're excellent coaches. And maybe that's the case with Spagnuolo. I don't think so, though, because he strikes me as a guy who could handle the kind of things that head coaches have to do as opposed to coordinators. And, you know, I'm sure if you asked Andy Reid, he would say Spagnuolo would be an amazing head coach. But I just don't have a good feeling that's going to happen for him. And bless his heart, he's willing to stay with the Chiefs. And he's perfectly happy to do that at this stage in his life and his career. Sure, he'd love to get another opportunity to be a head coach someplace. But it doesn't really sound like that was being offered. People wanted to bring him in as the defensive coordinator, just offer him more money, I think, is what it sounded like. So,
let me be clear here. I mean, for any team that is interested in Steve, but I don't think he's leaving Kansas City unless it's for a head coaching position.
Yeah.
As much as folks were after him as a defensive coordinator because his contract was up and he happened to be available, that's one thing. But I think he wants to be head coach. He was saying this back in 2020, and now things are a little bit different because he's posted so many years in a row of quality defenses. And last year they were almost the best defense in the league. Regular season wise, I think they were only behind the Baltimore Ravens on certain metrics. He was the head coach of the St. Louis Rams from 2009 to 2011. Didn't go so well. Right. And you understand why some teams would have trepidation. I think maybe he's learned a little bit in Kansas City. I don't know. I didn't cover the St. Louis Rams in 2011. I don't even remember what I was doing. I was just out of college. Who knows what I was doing? But You know, maybe he may have gotten too involved in the offense. Maybe if he designs it more like Andy Reid does, where he sort of lets Spagnuolo be the defensive head coach and you were to bring in an offensive coordinator. I know it didn't work out, but like similar to the situation with Washington where Eric Bieniemy was quote unquote the offensive head coach in Washington and you design it that way. I could see it, you know, because I could, you know, even behind the scenes and off the field and talking to play, like they love Steve Spagnuolo, like that Andy Reid type of
right.
love. And mm-hmm. so I just think if it's designed in a certain way, it could work. He's also, you know, 64, you know, not to say that you can't hire a 64-year-old as a head coach, but I also think you've kind of seen the league skew a little bit younger
right.
mm-hmm. when it comes to those positions. I don't know. So I don't think it's out of the question, but I think a team next, first of all, he's got to have somewhat of a repeat performance this year. And you right. could do that with Chris Jones, even without LeJarius Sneed. And I think some team is going to have to be desperate of like, we are awful defensively. I know it didn't work out as with him as a head coach. Well, we're willing to do that to get him in the building. It's going to have to be, yeah. I think, that type of situation. I hope that for him. You know, if that's what he wants, I think that would be great. And the Chiefs could kind of figure out what to do from there. I think they have a really good defensive coordinator candidate in their coaching room right now in Joe Cullen. I think Joe Cullen could step up and do that instantly. So we're rooting for Spagnuolo to maybe get that for the 2025 season, John. Okay, my God. Say goodbye to the old kickoff. We got a brand spanking new one. And this is a radical change. We're going to get into rule changes in the next segment. We'll bring Steve in, as I said, but you talk about changes from year to year when it comes to NFL rules. A lot of times it's slight changes. This is a complete change of the NFL kickoff. I don't even have my head wrapped around it. John, I know you do to an extent, right? So like if you could yeah. go into... In layman's terms, what we can expect from the kickoff now that owners have voted to change it for the 24 season, I should say.
Well, if you've watched any XFL games recently, you have a general idea of what this looks like and how it can happen. What it amounts to is the kicker kicks it off like he always has back at the 35-yard line.
Mm-hmm.
But his blockers line up on the opponent's 40-yard line and the opponent's line up on the 35-yard line. Now you have 10 kicking team players on the 40 and at least 7 on the 35-yard line. They can have two more within 5 yards of the 35. And then as many as 2 returners back in what they call the landing zone. And that's a critical thing because if the ball doesn't reach the landing zone, it's a touchback that goes to the 40-yard line. If it goes into the end zone, it's a touchback that goes to the 30-yard line. If it lands on the ground or hits the return team's player in the landing zone and then rolls into the end zone and is downed there by the returning team, it's a 20-yard touchback. So there's a big incentive for the kicking team to drop it in that landing zone.
Right.
And essentially, the team has to return it.
Right.
Because, right. you know, you don't want to get the ball down at the 10-yard line or whatever.
Yeah.
And so that means we're going to have a lot more returns and it's going to be an entirely different play because we're not going to have these two teams rushing headlong at each other over a 30-yard distance and then, you know, running into each other. It's going to be more like a play, but just lined up in a different way. And if you look at, and you can see some of these on social media or go to YouTube and look at some kickoffs from the XFL, you can see how it works. The XFL actually is lined up 5 yards further downfield. The teams are at the 35 and the 30. So there's even a larger space for the returner to work in front of or behind their blocking. So yeah. I think yeah. this is going to be a very interesting play to watch unfold. And I think it's going to be very interesting to see how special teams coordinators choose to play it. I mean, right. we don't really know how it's going to work and how they're going to do things. I think it's going to be fun to watch. So we'll see.
It sounds to me at the owners meetings that the Steeler, by the way, with the Steeler, I didn't get the team before. Deontay Johnson is a Carolina Panther. Good luck to him.
Oh,
but
okay.
The Steelers walked out of their owners meetings and instantly heard this. And like you were doing the math, John, you think about dropping it in, fair catches are gone. You're gonna have to return it. And it sounded like they instantly signed Cordarrelle Patterson, who happened to be like on the open market. Right. And I think that's an indication of the return game being back. Like if they put it in the drop zone, and for what it's worth from a Chiefs standpoint, like they've already been doing this. Dave Tobe has wanted teams to return because they think they can get an advantage. And Harrison Butker is trained of, we see a lot of touchbacks, right? But he's also can drop it in. And I think that's going to be a new skill that is going to be valuable for kickers. And again, I think it keeps returning in the game. We have Jared Sapp. He's on our newsletter, Arrowhead Pride Premier, arrowheadpride.com/subscribe. If you're interested in that, some extra content for you, but he's writing an article this week for us about how this may save the career of Kadarius Toney or players like maybe have not panned out as much on offense for one reason or another, injury, otherwise, whatever, but they happen to be pretty good returners. And I think this may put some returners like a Toney back in the mix for a roster spot. Like you look at the Chiefs wide receiver room right now. I'm not trying to get a start on a 53 man projections way too early, but you know, they generally keep six receivers, right? You're looking at, very quickly, my quick analysis here. Rashee Rice is in. Hollywood Brown is in. That's already two spots gone. I believe Justin Watson is going to be here. All they have shown over the past few years is how trustworthy he is. So that's already three spots taken. Now you're looking at Sky Moore. Are they going to give up up on a second rounder just because the first 2 years have? I don't see that.
No.
So that's already four spots. Then you're looking at two spots. Like, let's say they don't keep seven like they did for the first time ever last year. Let's say they only keep six. You're looking at two spots for what I would assume it to be at least one draft pick at receiver. Kadarius Toney, Montrell Washington, the great Justin Ross, Cornell Powell, Nico Remigio, who had some fans' heads turning at training camp, and then a couple other receivers. And so it's competitive. I think for Kadarius Toney, it might be a little bit of an uphill battle just because of everything that goes into it. But now all of a sudden you're like, man, wouldn't he be the best at this? Because what this rule change intends to do is make it safer because the speed slows down significantly. You think about two trains and they have so much momentum. Now you've shortened where the two previous stops are. So it's, you know, much, much kind of slower, more of like a blocking scheme play. And then you kind of put Toney in the mix there with this ultimate speed. I think it could be a weapon for you. And based upon XFL numbers, John, it makes it a lot safer and enhances returns. You know, returns historically have been one of the most exciting plays that we can see potentially in an NFL game. So it keeps him in the game. Andy Reid was quoted at the owners meeting saying that he was in support of this, and that to me is an extension of what Dave Tobe thinks. When we got to training camp last year, John, you probably remember this, but because you love Dave Tobe, I know you're a Tobe head. Tobe was ticked off that they changed the rules. He was like, no one is going to return it because any fair catch got moved right up to, what was it, the 25? And so, you know, a lot of times there was no reason to risk it. And now, I mean, Uncle Dave is back in a big way, with this rule.
Yeah. I'll put it this way. It's been amusing to me that prior to the rule being passed, people were saying, well, this is just special teams coaches trying to keep their jobs. Well, okay, maybe there's some of that. You would do the same thing if you were a special teams coach. You would be pushing to keep that as part of the game. It's your passion. Yeah. It's what you do, you know? But I also think that the owners don't want to make kickoffs go away. And that was what was going to have to happen because the kickoff play is just inherently dangerous. Yes, it's, you know, changes what you want. It messes with the integrity of the game, if you want to call it that, because it's different than it's ever been before. But we just have to get used to the idea that, you know, we're not going to accept guys getting concussions and going back out on the field. Now we know that's a bad idea. And we know that we need to have plays where that isn't going to happen, where it's not going to be a likely outcome of the play. That's how this all started. And the teams then started kicking the balls through the end zone. And that's not exciting. That's messing with the integrity of the game too. So this is a way for the kickoffs to be part of the game of football again. It's going to look different. It's going to be different. but I think it's going to make the game better. And so we'll see.
I agree. I like it. I think it now makes you pay attention to the kickoffs
right
at games when we would cover them, or even if you were just watching at home. Once a team scored a touchdown, you knew you had about 5 minutes before any kind of action would happen. That is now gone. You have to be back for the kickoff because it's the one, I think the one sore spot, and this is like really nitpicking that is kind of sad with it, is it's the death of the surprise onside kick. There's no more surprise onside kicks, and you could really only onside kick if you're trailing in the fourth quarter. And it's something you got to announce. And so it is something that, you know, changes in that aspect. But I think, when you're looking at the net gain for the game of football, and I think it's hard to argue that this isn't good for the game. All right, let's move on. The Chiefs, this is an interesting story, hosted a Welsh rugby star on Tuesday. This is part of the International Player Pathway Program. His name is Lewis Rees-Zammit. Ron Kopp, our lead analyst, made a terrible joke on X about how that sounds like Lee Summit. Like, someone needs to take his ex account away. If we had control of it, we would suspend him for a week, but we're not going to do that. He's 23. He ran a 4.43, John, 40-yard dash at the NFL International Pro Day. He looks like Christian McCaffrey. My girlfriend says he looks like a character from Love is Blind, but I think he looks like Christian McCaffrey. He's 6'3", 209 pounds, known for his tackling skills. He's trying out for what looks to be running back, wide receiver, and kick returner. But if he can tackle, I mean, I'll have an asset on special teams. And I could see him even being a linebacker. I mean, he has no NFL position. So is it up to him what he plays? I don't know. Anyway, I think the Chiefs have an edge if they like this guy on getting him. Because if you're an international football player, where else would you want to go right now? Like, if you woke up and you're like, oh, man, I'm an NFL player now, where would I want to go? So if there's interest from the Chiefs, I got to imagine that he goes to Kansas City. And the cool thing about this is it doesn't even hold a roster spot. You can have 91 players like the Chiefs have done with their offensive tackle, Godrick. I can't pronounce the name, but they've had him around here on the practice squad. He was on the offseason roster last year and then the practice squad. So really interesting story here. It looks like the Broncos, Browns, and Jets were also interested, John.
I happened to see some tape of him playing rugby. Mm-hmm. And I got to tell you, I think this guy would be an amazing kickoff returner.
Yeah,
I really do. His highlights are all of him getting the ball a long way from the goal and outrunning everybody along right. the sideline to go in and score. Now, I don't know anything about rugby, and I admit that a lot of times he advanced the ball by kicking it while running, which, of course, is not part of American football. And so he's going to have to figure out how to do it just with speed, but man, this kid's got some speed,
yeah.
Some, you know, maybe just a 4.44, but he's got practical speed as a player. And, I mean, he was really outrunning defenders on these long plays. So I'm kind of excited to see what he's going to be like in the NFL. It's going to be different than, you know, these guys that come in as punters and place kickers and stuff. This is going to be a guy who's going to play in what we would typically call a skill position role as a ball carrier or as a defender. Even
this is
it's going to be fun.
This is Justin Ross times 10. If he ends up in Kansas City, I mean, it's you could tell already, like, people will be up in St. Joe watching him and being like, gotta yeah. find a roster spot for him. So we'll see what happens. All right. Next news piece here, John, the Buffalo Bills. You know, I was about to say AFC conference rival, but I,
oh man,
I mean, it's cold.
Cold.
Are they even on the radar anymore? But they signed safety, Mike Edwards to a 1-year deal. I think this was frankly, a story of outbidding Kansas City. You know, Kansas City does a really good job in the offseason of these players who they become important for a season in KC, but they do a really nice job of being like, okay, as great as he was, as great of a role player as he was, this is what he's worth to us. And I just think that the Bills probably outbid the Chiefs there. And so he has now beaten the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. He's won a Super Bowl with the Chiefs. And now that he's in Buffalo, he'll never win a Super Bowl again. I think is the fair analysis.
Right. Oh, man. Sorry, Buffalo fans. I know there's probably a few of you listening. We can't help ourselves. I'm sorry.
No,
I'm
I don't think there any, I don't think there's any listening to us, but I don't, it's just a 1-year contract. I don't have the details on it, but that would be my guess. And, you know, I think the Bills probably outbid the Chiefs, given a little bit more money, which you understand. You always understand if these
right,
guys move on.
Right.
Plus you got two rings that, you know, you're in good shape at that stage. All right. John, you did the story for us. So I'll let you take over here. Andy Reid loves butts and he cannot lie about it anymore. it was in the Athletic.
Well, this all started because I saw this story in the Athletic, and I don't make a habit of reading the Athletic all the time. I subscribe to it. I go check out a story that I've heard about from time to time. And this was one of those because I knew it had a quote from Andy Reid in it. And I just cracked up laughing. Pete will attest to this, that I sent him a message and said, this is hilarious. You need to check this out.
Yeah.
And so we decided to do some excerpts from the article on arrowheadpride.com. But it all comes down, our interest to it started with this quote from Andy Reid, who was quoted by Kansas City Chiefs former punter Dustin Colquitt, who said, he'd sit down with me and be like, you went to the Pro Bowl and we don't have much to say to you, but don't lose your butt. Right. Punters have to have big butts. Yeah. As soon as you start to look like you're going downhill from a physique standpoint, you're out of here. Keep that ass going. Mm. Oh, man. That's why I can't even imagine Andy Reid saying that.
That's why the best Andy Reid articles and maybe even a book, who knows, is going to come out after he's done. Because the players with the best stories are the ones that no longer have a job in the NFL because they're old. So we'll look forward to that. But it makes sense. You know, I've always heard it as more of a hockey thing where you're always looking for a big ass on a hockey player. But apparently that extends to the NFL. All right. That's the Chiefs news roundup. We'll continue to have emergency podcasts as we need them with breaking news. Coming up next, someone who we know loves a big butt. Steve Serta joins the podcast to talk about these NFL rule changes. Stay with us. This is the Arrowhead Pride Editor Show. Back here on the Arrowhead Pride Editor Show, Pete Sweeney hanging out with John Dixon. We now welcome in our great Arrowhead Pride producer, Steve Serta. Steve, we are going to have a rule changes roundtable, go over the rules with you. We'll try to touch upon how they might impact the Chiefs, if at all. But Steve, we talked about kickoffs and the brand new kickoff in the last segment. Any thoughts from you on this new kickoff rule and how it changes the game?
I think it's good for the NFL. You know, kick return touchdowns are way down across the league, and I think it's one of the most exciting plays in football. So I think long term it could be a good rule change. I have zero confidence that everyone's going to know all of the layers and wrinkles to it. And the officials that there's going to be no issues moving forward as they try to figure this thing out and make sure they're on top of everything, like players, officials. I think it's kind of overcomplicating things and there'll probably be some issues early on, but long term, I do think it's good for football. Like the onside kick part of it. You know, I don't love that you can't surprise teams with that anymore. But also, onside kicks aren't very impactful overall because they're really hard to actually achieve and complete a successful onside kick. So I don't think that's that big of an issue. Like, I can totally get past that. Like, the only onside kick that I can think of off the top of my head is like the one in the Super Bowl with the Saints and the Colts.
Right.
And it's like in the entire history of the NFL, that's like the biggest one and most impactful one. Probably I'm okay with onside kicks probably going away.
Yeah. And I think to your point, what'll be funny is at the beginning of the year, and especially during the preseason, these players are not going to know what they're doing. And I know there's going to be like brain farts of players running too fast. Look, if the San Francisco 49ers don't know how overtime works in the Super Bowl, you can bet that there are going to be problems with the new kickoff. And I think you're right. Like, most onside kicks that you see from week to week basis in the regular season, they know they're coming anyway, even the successful ones. It's not like you're taking that away necessarily. And so I'm still eager for 4th and 20. And I do think that having that as an option would be way more exciting than the onside kick that is successful, which is usually like, it's gotta be less than 10% that they're successful. So
I thought it was interesting that they turned that, you know, they had a 4th-and-20 proposal on the table at the owners meeting, and they voted on that before they got to voting on the kickoff proposal. I wonder if they had voted on the 4th-and-20 proposal after the kickoff proposal that it might have passed. That's just a thought I would throw out there.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe next year.
Right.
It is worth saying too, and I didn't mention this, that the kickoff is on a quote unquote trial basis from the owners. Right. They're trying it for 1 year and then they're going to see how it goes. So I actually like that they did that instead of just putting it in the preseason and having to decide, like, just commit to it for 1 year and just see how it goes.
Right.
All right. Next. This was a thing that they got away from, but hip drop tackles are banned. And if it's hard to even describe, but if you know that you would know it, I believe, if you saw it, or maybe not. And that's what I think a lot of people are thinking might be the problem with this. It's where, in a sense, the best way I could describe it is when a runner has the ball and they're wrapped up by a defender, and the defender not only uses all their weight to like swing them down, but also lands on the player, led to a number of injuries last year. The problem and the con here, John, that a lot of people are referencing is that it's going to be terribly hard to officiate this. And so you just wonder if this is something that, you know, maybe like the pass interference that could be reviewed is a one and done. But the owners seemed pretty forward about really wanting this out of the game. So I don't know. I don't know what to make of this one.
I think it's significant that it was a unanimous vote by the owners. You know, there were three teams that voted against the kickoff rule, but the owners were as a group committed to getting this out of the game. I think that people are overreacting to it to a certain extent. The competition committee said that I think it was 230. They identified 230 instances of these tackles in 2023. And that was an increase from the year before. So part of their concern about this is that something being used more and more often by defensive players, and they don't want it to get out of control. So that's part of it. But if, you know, 230, that's less than one per game that they've been able to pick out by looking at tape after the fact. I think that means it's not going to be called all that often. And I think another thing that's getting past people is that it's defined by three specific elements, and all of those elements have to be there for it to be a swivel hip drop tackle, which is what's actually being banned. You have to grab the player with both hands or wrap around them. You have to swivel your body and then drop your weight, and your weight has to land on their legs or trap their legs. If those three things don't happen, it's legal. But if all three of them do, then it's a 15-yard penalty and a free first down for the offense.
Steve, any thoughts from you?
I don't have any issues with the implementation of the rule and the idea behind it being like there's just too many star players that we've seen in recent years have significant knee injuries because of this style of play. But I think the biggest issue that the NFL is going to face from this, and just like from at home viewership standpoint, is the human element of the referees enforcing it. And like we see it every season with quarterback hits, like it's guys are afraid to just lay a quarterback out now because those are game changing penalties when you do it late in the fourth quarter and it's a one score game. And I'm all for trying to make sure that the players are safe and doing things at the benefit of them to try to keep them healthy and on the field, because we want to see superstar players play for their teams and make plays and all of that. I just think that when you put so much of it in the hands of the referee, it inevitably affects the outcome of games and the product overall. So like that's my biggest concern is that, sure, what John rattled through, all the elements of this that will wind up resulting in a flag. Like, I actually have to see that be implemented because I'm not confident that the human part of this is going to allow them to enforce this in a way that isn't significant to the game that isn't seriously impactful, like late in the fourth quarter when something like this happens.
Justin Reed commented on X, horrible, really making it difficult for defense to make a play, especially when a defensive player is running a guy down from behind. Players don't make the rules, though, so you're just going to have to play and let the chips fall where they fall. I think it's a valid point. I think about, I talked about McCaffrey before, but I think about McCaffrey's Super Bowl screen trick play touchdown. Like, they didn't stop it. But say there was a player close to him, and you have one of the most dynamic players in the NFL in a straight line for the end zone. Is that the only way to get him down? Like, how would you else get if you're behind him? I'm talking like right. directly mm-hmm. behind. I don't know what you do at that point. So it'll be interesting to see. But over the years, we freaked out in the offseason about things, and then players adjust, and it's okay. I do think that there's a certain threshold that you reach where it's starting to change football to a point where it might be hard to come back from. So we'll see. I think preseason will be big for this. I think players are going to get penalized, and it won't matter in the preseason. But the last thing you're going to want to see is a really good NFL game settled by a judgment call that goes awry and maybe is wrong the next day, something like that. So,
well, I would disagree. I would say the last thing we want to see is a player like Patrick Mahomes be lost for the season as a result of one of these tackles. And that's what this is about, is that some significant players lost significant time as a result of tackles like this. And the league doesn't want to see that happen to its stars. I think that's the bottom line here.
Yeah.
Is that the likelihood of injury is so much greater with this kind of tackle than it is with others.
Yeah. I feel bad for the defensive players though, too. I mean, you gotten to a point where you're first, it was, just let's not touch the head. Then it's like, well, you can't touch the legs either. And now it's like, well, you got the middle of the body to work with, but only in certain tackles, you can't do that. And so, JJ Watt waited. Said, I don't have the quote in front of me, but it was like, let's just put flags on us already. Or let's just speed up and get to flag football, which is terrible to watch. The Pro Bowl was terrible. All right, on to our next rule. And we got to speed up along here. But teams now are more likely, John, to get a third replay challenge. How will this one work?
Well, it's pretty simple. But before, if you got two right, if you managed to overturn two calls by the officials, you got a third challenge. And now you just have to overturn one. You get two by default. And if one of those overturns the play, then you get another one. That's that simple.
Yeah, this is fine. I mean, I think we're always about getting it right. There's another one, John, and then Steve, I'll let you comment, but the replay assistant will now have more input on and this is like the eye in the sky on certain calls.
Yeah, this is pretty simple too. They just said that there's two plays where you can have the replay official give you some input. One of them is on
delay game.
The call, a play that starts after the clock runs down to zero. The game clock runs not to zero, not the play clock, by the way, the game clock, not the play clock. And the other one is on if a quarterback is out of the pocket on a play where he throws the ball
and for intentional grounding.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think people are unhappy that it's limited to that, but I think this is the way we get to the point that more plays can be affected by review after the fact, is by starting with some. So it's a step forward.
Yeah. I think my only caution here is just slowing the game down. But again, I think there's an argument to be made that this eye in the sky replay assistant could actually eventually, as you're saying, we're inching toward that, just like fix plays quick where, hey, everyone just saw clearly on replay what this should have been. Not every play is going to be like that. Look at the last 2 minutes of the NCAA tournament right now. I feel like it takes an eternity. But again, I think generally having an eye in the sky will be good. I'm glad that they are expanding it to an extent. Steve, going to you, what's your reaction here to just teams and now getting a third challenge and then having the referees being more involved?
Yeah, I think the third challenge is fine, but kind of what you were saying about the review stuff is how much is that going to slow everything down? Like, is this going to be a huge issue? Like when basketball started doing this stuff and for some reason it takes them 10 minutes to watch a replay 25 times. Like,
yeah,
it's about slowing the game down, because I do think there's something too. Like, you know, when you're late in the fourth quarter and you're on a 2-minute drive and you're trying to go win the game, like, you don't want to stop the game for 10 minutes to go look at a replay or something like that. But I think it is a step in the right direction. I would like to see this for some of those quarterback hits and things like that, like more reviewable things like that. But I think also some of this is like, you don't want the NFL just generally doesn't want the referees to be second guessed constantly too, because there is a kind of just accept the penalty and move on. You got to deal with it. It's a part of the game. So I think that's kind of an element of everything here too, but at least it feels like we're moving in the right direction, where some things that I think matter a little bit more might actually get reviewed down the line.
Yeah. I'm okay with inching towards this. I think by allowing certain things to be reviewed now, it is still a little bit of we'll see, in the sense that, if it does drastically slow the game down, maybe there's an alternate solution next year. And you wouldn't know that until you actually try to do this stuff in the regular season. Next changes that you should know about, there have been bylaw changes. So this is a little bit off the field. I like this one. John, you can weigh in after this, but the trade deadline moved to week 9. I think the Chiefs personnel staff is as good of it as it's ever been. So I think that's an advantage for Kansas City. I also love the NBA and NHL trade deadline. And I think anytime you're able to move that back, you have a little bit more clarity on where your team is. And it enhances the idea of players moving. The NFL always paled in comparison to the NHL and NBA on that trade deadline day. And now I think it's right there, John.
Well, essentially what they've done is react to the fact that there's a 17th game.
Yeah.
They've moved it just a game back because the season is a game longer. And there was another proposal that we extended until after week 10, which would make it ready for week 18 to be part of for an 18th game in the season, which I think we'll have in another year or two. But they decided to just go ahead and make it after week 9 now.
Yeah. Steve, anything on that?
I'm fine with it. As far as I'm concerned, move that thing back to week 13. Let's see what these teams can do. Like,
you know what? How about the Wednesday before the Super Bowl? Why don't we do that?
let's see what happens when teams are in the playoff mix late in the season and they're feeling the pressure to win and get into the postseason. Like, I want to see what happens in that scenario.
I think there's a case to be made that you make it a little bit later than this. I don't disagree with you now that I'm thinking about it, because that would make teams a little bit more clear. Okay, we're going to the playoffs, and it would make room for teams to be a little bit honest with themselves and look themselves in the mirror and say, I don't think we're doing that. And those teams would be more apt to trade stars for picks, and you know, that could help push things along. And same thing for teams in the championship mix, could help them get some impact players, you know, down the road. Of course, it's worth saying, because I compared it to the NBA and NHL. When you trade in the NBA or NHL, basketball and hockey, it's a little bit more seamless. I mean, yeah, there are plays and things to learn, but basketball and hockey are a little bit more like in-game. Football, you have a whole playbook to learn, probably a little bit easier defensively than offensively, especially in Kansas City. But again, I actually like that the trade deadline's moved. And Steve, I don't know about week 13, but I wouldn't mind like week 11 ish. Maybe 13's late. Other bylaws that have been changed, John, unlimited players to return from IR. This had been 8, seemed like a silly rule.
It's in the postseason. Yeah. Unlimited in the postseason.
I'm sorry. Limited in the postseason. It had been 8 for the year. Right. 2 players, can be on IR ahead of the cut down and can now come back. This is before the season begins. So explaining this, it happened in Kansas City with Chad Henne. I remember Chad Henne. He got injured in the preseason. He had to be on the active roster in order to put him on IR to return, which is silly, because then you're exposing maybe one player that you didn't want to expose to the rest of the league, and you have to wait a day and kind of roll the dice in a sense. And especially if they're within the beginning of their career, John, it's subject to waivers at that point. So you really, anyway, that is now fixed. You're allowed two players that can be on IR to return and can return, and you could get through the cutdown. And then John, the third quarterback, the emergency quarterback, can be on the practice squad. This is different from last year. A third quarterback can dress, and they don't have to be on the 53-man roster. And John, the only way, right, this quarterback can come in is if the first two go down due to injury.
Right. They didn't change any other part of the third quarterback rule, just the part of they have to be on the active roster.
Yeah.
So this means that you could, if you want to have three quarterbacks on the sideline for every game, you can forego one of your practice squad elevations, because it didn't change the number of practice squad elevations. It just said the quarterback could be elevated an unlimited number of times. So if you just want to go with one other practice squad player, go for it. You know, dress your third quarterback and make him the emergency option. I don't really think there's a big problem with this. I don't know why they just don't let teams have a third emergency quarterback and just be done with it, you know, have an extra roster spot, but whatever, you know, it's fine.
Yeah. For what it's worth, in the 53-man roster projections last year, I was including a third quarterback because I thought this was so valuable. And
right.
You know, you would have thought, and Andy Reid for so many years just had three on the roster because of that. Now my boy, Chris Oladokun, better get his uniform cleaned, and because he's going to have to be in uniform. You know, we tend to think, Steve, any comments on these IR rules?
I just think that when they kind of expanded everything during COVID, like, this is just how it should have been. Like, I totally agree with John. Like, you saw how quick things can decline, like with the 49ers a couple of years ago in the playoffs.
Right.
If you don't have that other quarterback, like, just allow them to do it. But I think anything that makes it easier to make sure you have like a full roster of players on game day is beneficial for the team. So I think this is how it should have been. So this was just kind of them course correcting. And I do think that teams have gotten really good about how they strategize that kind of stuff too on game.
Right. Days. Well, I think it depends. I think it depends on the way your coaches deal with things internally too. You know, the Chiefs have used it for a lot of special teams players. And will they now just have one special teams player? You know, like last year, they had Mike Pinnell was a key player at the tail end of the season and in the postseason when practice squad elevations are unlimited. So, you know, are they going to say it's more important to have that third quarterback? I think it's going to be interesting to see how teams choose to handle this situation.
We mentioned COVID. Speaking of COVID, I should note this. Forget Oladokun. COVID hero, former New Orleans Saints quarterback Ian Book is currently on the Chiefs roster as their fourth quarterback. Remember, he had that Monday night game, fourth quarterback that came in and performed absolutely horribly. He's working on his game with the quarterback guru that is
Andy
Reid.
Forgotten about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Every don't read it. Don't judge a book by its cover. Is what the sorry, that was a Ron Kopp joke. All right, players will now be declared out if they don't travel. This makes sense. What are we hiding? The Chiefs are gonna hate this rule. What are we hiding? If they're not in the city, how could they play? What are we doing? This would seem like a no-brainer, right, John? I mean, come on.
Yeah, well, and this isn't even a bylaw change. This is just like an administrative rule change that the league can kind of make on its own, and I think that's what's happened here. Mm-hmm. They made a few minor changes in how the injury report worked last year that we had to struggle with over the course of the season, how to handle what they were doing differently. And this,
John,
is going to be
struggle is struggle is a soft term for the how you
well,
felt
is,
about the new injury rule.
Yes,
behind the
well,
scene.
it you know, it is all about us, as we are fond
right.
of saying on this program.
Yeah.
But so this is just a way to make it more complicated for us to follow and have to work more on Saturdays when they make a change by declaring a player out because they didn't travel with the team. But it's the right way to do it. The only problem with this, of course, is that there are players who are out on that they decide they're going to put out on Saturday for a home game. How do we find out about those? We probably don't. So this
right.
is going to be kind of a disadvantage for traveling teams that they won't be able to play with this. That's just what I'm saying.
You know, I got to say it. I think this is, again, a step toward more clarity with the injury situation. And I mean, I don't know for sure. So this is just my analysis of it. But like, this feels like a gambling. Like, gambling is getting more popular. if the player's not on the plane, just tell people. There's no reason, right? Like, Steve, I know you love to put in a sports wager. So, I mean, you got to love this news, right?
Yeah, I think this absolutely has to do with gambling. I mean, we just see the investment that the sports books have made across all of TV, all of podcasting, all of sports. Like, I think this is something that just it helps with that, provide a little bit more clarity. And like, it's not like when we know ahead of time that players don't travel with the team, like we know they're out, like they just don't designate them as out. And so I guess it just provides more clarity on the injury report and then like, and then betting odds. Like, I think that really has more to do with it than anything else.
Good way to put it. Good way to end it. That is an Arrowhead Pride Editor show. Thank you to John and thank you to Steve for joining me today. We mentioned it before. If you leave us a review on Apple iTunes, we will read it on the podcast. The big push we're going for right now, though, is take 1 second and give us 5 stars. We're trying to get to that 4.8 number. We really appreciate it. We have beach season coming up. The AP Draft Room will continue to have emergency podcasts as news breaks. We'll keep you updated at Arrowhead Pride.com. So for John and for Steve, my name is Pete Sweeney. Thank you for joining us on another edition of the Arrowhead Pride Editor Show. Hey there, it's Pete Sweeney from Arrowhead Pride, and I'm excited to announce a new element of the Arrowhead Pride experience for diehard Chiefs fans. It's our brand new newsletter, Arrowhead Pride Premier. Arrowhead Pride Premier is a newsletter delivered to your inbox twice a week from me. For $50, you'll get an annual subscription packed with insider coverage from yours truly and new in-depth analysis from voices around Kansas City. It's all about what I'm seeing and hearing around the team. During the season, we'll deliver a newsletter ahead of each game to get ready for Sunday, and a newsletter after each game to unpack exactly what happened. Subscribe to Arrowhead Pride Premier today at arrowheadpride.com/subscribe.